I usually play with time and space in terms of trying to reframe whatever the issue is that I'm upset about and think like, what is the expectation that I have and how is it unmet? And how can I shift that expectation? And what if the expectation were completely different? Using those things on a regular basis, I think have allowed me to make better decisions and be a little bit less emotional or reactive to bad news. And I think if you compound that like small amount of space that you can create for yourself for an extended period of time, you can make better decisions.
Welcome to the game where we talk about how to get more customers, how to make more per customer, and how to keep them longer, and the many failures and lessons we have learned along the way. I hope you enjoy and subscribe.
For people who are looking to get started, what do you think is the best business for people to get into right now?
I think the best business for someone to start if they've never started a business before is something that they already have tangential experience with. And so usually you have parents, friends, family, first jobs that you have some industry knowledge. So if you look at like Y Combinator, for example, they look for founders who have lived with the problem and or have industry experience. And so if you have both of those things, like the likelihood that you will be successful with the endeavor that you're going in is significantly higher because there's a huge learning curve to entering any new industry. And if you can just pay down some of that ignorance tax, even if the opportunity vehicle isn't the perfect one, you will still have a significantly higher likelihood of winning. And one of the big fallacies of your first business is that it's going to be your last business, and it almost never is. And so the idea is like, it's much more valuable to get started on something that you have a higher likelihood of success on so that you can get some faster rewards for the behavior of getting into business. And then from there, get some resources, get some skills, and then you can have a better perspective from which to make a jump or a decision on what to do next. And at least that's my two cents on it.
We were at the gym, Jack and I, the other day. Actually, two people came up to us and they said that they love the podcast that we did together, the first one.
Yeah.
I think that's how they found the podcast, but was their, both people separate referenced that podcast. Like, yo, and one person said, when are you going to have Hormozy back on?
Yeah.
I said, well, coincidence, you know, he's coming like the next week. They had a question for you that I told them I would ask you. So if you ever see me in person, you want to have me ask Alex Hormozy something, you just ask. He was a W-2 employee.
Okay.
And he says he really likes your content and wants to know your advice to people who aren't selling anything.
True.
But they're an employee and they want to make more money. They want to get better at what they're doing. How could they apply your advice to them?
You have to figure out how your job directly ties to revenue in the business. And if you don't know, ask. Like fundamentally, like if you don't know how your job makes the business money, then ask. And then once you understand how you directly tie to money, then drive towards that. Because fundamentally, every position in the business makes the business more money if the job is well designed. Otherwise, why are you there? Right? I mean, even if you're like, I'm a frontline customer service rep, it's like, okay, well, how do you, like if I had to ask that person, like, how do you make the business money? The answer is, if I do a good job, people will come back and buy again. If I do a good job, we'll have a lower percentage of people who will refund. If I do a good job, the business will be able to command higher prices off of word of mouth in the future. Like these are the things that you can explain and say like, okay, well then if those are the things that drive revenue, then I'm going to try and focus on those things. And then you can ask your boss, and this is a great question, is what would it take for me to make this? It's not saying I need to make that. It's just asking them to solve the problem. Like what would it take for me to earn that? And then they can give you an objective metric. Now, your boss might not be high enough. And then you say, cool, can you ask the person above you? And by doing it that way, you're also being clear, like, I want to make the business more money. And in doing so, I would like a small percentage of the increase that I'm able to bring. Like, what would it take? And I think that's a great way to have that conversation. Layla, my wife, also makes tons of content for like how to ask for raises, how to negotiate that stuff on her channel as a side note. When she's more knowledgeable than I am about it.
Now, I do think though, a lot of careers out there will never give you that opportunity. You say, I want to make more money or I want to do more. They're going to say, you get back to your desk. Just focus on that. Yeah. And there aren't really those opportunities out there. In those situations, would you recommend looking for work elsewhere?
I think small businesses are a good opportunity for that stuff. So if you're like in a massive corporation, you can quickly cap out and get like lost in the shuffle if it's this massive org. And so I think it makes sense to go get basically a stamp of approval from maybe a name brand company that you can then leverage into a smaller business that you'll have a lot more impact, a lot more opportunity for growth. Most entrepreneurs are far more receptive to anyone who says, I will help you make more money. So again, if you can change your environment, you'll often be able to change your behavior.
By the way, I meant to ask this earlier. I noticed we had a bit of a problem, actually. It was on Instagram.
Yeah.
And I noticed you're not following me back on Instagram.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
So
following a lot he's of other labeling people. This as something that's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you have to say about that?
I think it's terrible.
I only follow comedy and philosophy accounts for the most part.
Comedy and philosophy accounts?
Yeah. The only two truth tellers.
And what do you get from those accounts by watching...
I enjoy it. Yeah. Okay. Both give me context on life. Some make me laugh, some make me think.
Who are your favorite comedians?
Oh, man. I have so many. I mean, I follow a lot of comedians. Like, I basically follow any comedian I see on my newsfeed who makes comedy regularly. Like, if I click over their page and they've got like one comedy video and a bunch of like not videos, then I won't follow them. But if they make regular comedy clips, I will almost guaranteed follow them no matter how big they are. I like Andrew Schultz, yeah. Whitney Cummings, Sam Morrill, Mark Normand. I like Nima Naz. Matt Rife has obviously been blowing up.
Matt Rife is amazing.
Yeah, he's great. There's so many. Bill Burr, Nate Bargatze. There's so many. I'm just like naming names off the top. I like a lot of comedy. I mean, if it's comedy, I like it.
Yeah.
Do you like Norm MacDonald's comedy?
Yeah.
I love Norm MacDonald.
I mean, I'm a cheap date when it comes to comedy. Yeah. Like, basically, the only thing I don't like is like lazy comedy. Just like crude comedy for the sake of being crude. Like, that stuff, I'm not like... I don't think Zeph, like Theo Vaughn, that's great. Yeah. A great example. Not of that. He's also another great comedian. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I really like comedy a lot.
And do you like live shows or do you listen to comedy podcasts ever?
I don't listen to comedy podcasts. I watch their routines and I go to shows and I watch their clips.
Yeah, the comedy podcasts are hilarious.
I think the podcasts are 20 times better than live shows.
Oh, and Tom Segura, Burr Kreischer. Yeah. Like, yes, I mean, there's a ton of this. Yeah. I mean, there's so many. I think Big J Okerson's small, but I actually really love his stuff. There's so many.
Yeah. Cool. I prefer the podcast.
I prefer the podcast.
Interesting. Well, good to know. I actually just don't listen to podcasts in general. I'm not a podcaster.
I think the candid comedy in a podcast is 10 times better than rehearsed
super
comedy.
Super contextual. Yeah. Because they have to, like, the bit has to be funny every time in every single place with a cold audience. But like, if you're warmed up with like things that got said earlier and it's like relevant to the moment, like they can absolutely be, you know, hilarious. But no, I don't listen to podcasts.
Ever.
I listen to Elon Musk every time he goes on Joe Rogan.
Okay.
But I watched it, really. I watched
it. So what sort of media do you consume?
Twitter or X, whatever. That's my most active platform. That's the one that I'm on, like, by far the most.
Is it you that tweets?
Yeah, 100%. It's me on every tweet.
That's you everything.
Everything's me. I manage everything.
And what philosophy content do you like to consume? Are there certain people that are practicing
all the ancients. Philosophy?
So it's the ancients.
Anybody who's dead. If you're dead, I like you.
That's the way that you get validity for...
Well, I mean, you know, Epictetus, Seneca, like some of the Stoics. I like those guys. And you have some of the darker, you've got Dostoevsky and some of the other dudes.
If they're dead though, how do they post?
Graham, good question.
What?
I think it's like excerpts from...
I was trying to make a joke.
Okay.
Stupid.
Fair enough. Good. Good, Graham.
That's true.
You should be a comedian. Maybe he'll follow you then.
Yeah. Yeah. Classic Schrute. Classic Schrute. You know,
don't call me Schrute, man.
It's white.
For context, guys, I got this haircut this morning, and Graham said I look like Dwight Schrute. Off the rip. Off the rip. He didn't even say, like, nice haircut. It's like, you know, it's not like compliment sandwich. It was just like a
straight Dwight for Schrute.
Do we have any glasses?
I am not putting on glasses.
It would actually be, dude, if you had a tie on and like a slightly grayish brown suit, you'd slay it.
Oh, thank you. You'd think I'd just walk around on the strip. I just get approached by women.
People would be trying to take pictures with you. They'd be like, oh my God.
I just really don't think I look like Dwight Schrute that much. But maybe I could be. Maybe I could be wrong. You know, maybe I should throw on a hat or something, I guess.
I think you should change your Tinder profile.
To this?
Like, put the suit on, put the glasses on, and just say,
here's
like.
Here's the thing. If you own it, it's attractive. And I learned this from you. You said that one time you were in the car with some frat brother and the frat brother was like making out with some girl in the back of the car. And he was like, what was it? Chewing tobacco or something at the same time. And you're like, dude, how is she not disgusted by you right now? And he was just like, cause I don't care. Which for me, like, I still think about that to this
day. Yeah, but you could be owning the wrong thing.
Well, I will counter the fact. I think you can own whatever you want.
I think you can own whatever you want.
There's some things that shouldn't be worth owning.
I think it's the confidence. But if you do that, then chances are you're probably not going to be able to get a
girl. Imagine you owning being an incel. You know, like, I'm owning it. Like, that's not going to be attractive.
You probably wouldn't be an incel if you owned it.
That's a good point. That's a really good point.
So I think Coco Chanel said, fashion is whatever you can get away with. And I kind of just like that as one of the, you know, most fashionable women of all time, like icons. I feel like she has a good perspective on like what fashion is. And it's just whatever you can get away with. And I like that.
That's a good point. I feel like modern fashion, you look at it and you're like, this person looks like an animal. They don't even look like human at that point.
Oh, the
like
runway shows. I don't get what the point of these runway shows is at all.
It's actually a money thing. I only know this because my wife buys lots of expensive things. So those runways, so many of the outfits there are made to look high fashion. And then the people who are in attendance there, it's like a huge honor to be like invited by like Stella McCartney or Coco Chanel or whoever or Gucci to attend the runway show. Like usually you have to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to get invited to one of those shows. And it's usually like
20. On their clothing?
Yeah. It's like 20 people a year get invited, hand selected across the whole nation to get invited as like consumers. And then while you're there, they'll parade these, you know, people around, and then you're somewhat expected to bid on the actual outfits themselves.
Yeah,
and
the outfits are so atrocious. I mean, well, like, who's ever going
to
buy that
and actually wear that out to like Walmart?
You know, no one would ever wear these things.
You'd be amazed. You'd be amazed. And sometimes it's not the whole outfit. Sometimes it's a piece of it, or it's a hat, or a blouse, or whatever. But like, there'll be like $50,000, $100,000 dresses.
But to me, it seems like the ugliest clothing that they could get away with. To me, it seems like a social experiment. Like, how wild
social experiment
can we make this?
You guys are being filmed. There's a camera there. There's a camera.
I'm waiting for the joke to come like 20 years later, because I've seen some of these things with like shoes with a goldfish in them. Like, it's stupid.
Oh,
stuff.
There's like these necklaces, pendant things with a turtle inside of it. It's so
a live turtle?
Yeah, like a baby turtle.
Are you serious?
I've seen that before. It's very sad.
How is, but it's just, but in
a,
so it's
what
just
a ride
a
for
weird
the turtle,
outfits.
Right?
Well, for like 24 hours, maybe.
I mean,
right?
Think about the life it gets to lead. I mean, the comparison is just like, it's true. Just floating around water all day. Here, it like gets to travel the world. It gets to like hang out with
I bet
people.
If you asked the turtle, it would probably say it preferred that too.
Right.
I saw this video, and it was someone who did a social experiment where they created like this new hip store where they got like, I think it was like H&M and like cheap. Yeah.
Payless.
Yeah.
Right. But it's from Payless shoe store. And then all these people came and they started blogging about it and like, oh my God, this is so cute. This is amazing. But it's all just cheap.
Yeah.
And they bought, it was like $500 to $700 shoes, and they just only used Payless shoes and had people review them afterwards. The influencers, they're like, by the way.
Well, it really goes to show you how important marketing is. If you just
brand.
Yeah. Like, that's all it is. Yeah.
The associations.
You have no idea.
Yeah.
Like this shirt.
Oh my God.
How much do you think this shirt is?
Very nice. Very
Guess
expensive.
How much?
Guess how much
Guess
it
how
is.
Much?
I'm guessing this shirt right here, I can tell based off the material alone, $300.
How do you think it is?
I haven't felt it.
Give it a little touch, man.
You can feel it if you want to.
That feels like old Lulu. I'm going to go $60.
$60?
Yeah.
No, it's Tom Ford.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, really.
So I didn't know you were an expensive clothes.
No, it's free. It's free. Yeah, I'm not spending the money.
Are you sponsored by Tom?
No. Oh my gosh, no. That would be amazing. No. Yeah. Jason and Brett Oppenheim give me their clothing. And they
had the brokerage that he used.
The Oppenheim Group. Okay. Yeah. And so they buy some of the nicest stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, over time it'll shrink. Yeah. So when it shrinks, it no longer fits them, but it fits me perfectly. So I get all of their hand-me-downs.
Yeah.
Unreal. Yeah.
Must be.
So I have a whole wardrobe of almost exclusively Tom Ford and Dior.
Well, I buy brand new tank tops. I'll just like let the record show.
How many times do you wear them before you toss them?
Honestly, I don't know.
You said that your wife, Layla, has very expensive taste. Yes. Does this ever bother you? If she was like, Alex, I want to buy a $50,000 purse. You'd be like,
for Alex, it's pennies. It's like,
you wouldn't care.
No, she does that. Like, no, she does whatever she wants.
But not a single part of you.
She earns her own, like, we do this together.
But it's a joint thing, right? Yeah, like, exactly. So,
I mean, I spend money on, like, gym equipment. That's, like, what I like. That's, like, the one thing that I spend money on.
How much more new equipment? Like, they're not coming out with new machines every month, right?
I mean, they do come up with new machines.
They do?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I mean, every month? It's like a fashion
show.
Is
it inside your apartment?
No, so we just bought the old UFC headquarters. Yeah. Yeah, and so there's a huge, huge chunk of space.
Oh,
so right, we're making a massive gym there. Mm-hmm. So that'll probably cost like, I don't know, $450,000 all in. But like, so it's like, how many purses could she have? Probably a lot, you know? And that's so, but like, I just buy, you know, my stuff's a little chunkier than hers is, but like Layla wanted to have nice things her whole life. And so we have the ability to do that. So what do I gain by depriving her of that? It's not like it puts us in any kind of different financial situation than we are now. If her spending in any way materially affected our goals, she wouldn't do it. Like, she's only done that when it basically doesn't affect us in any real way. Why would I stop her from doing that? Like, why have the money to begin
but
with?
But have you ever thought of the reason why she wants the expensive things and why she wants to...
And I don't think she knows the answer either. Who knows?
Yeah.
Like, when people ask why, we just guess and answer. And we answer with things that we've answered in the past that people have given us approval for. So it's like, why are you so motivated, Alex? I could be like, my father never gave me enough approval. Or I could say my mother didn't pay enough attention to me. Or I could say I had a teacher who encouraged me early on. Or I spoke once in class and I did a good job and I really wanted to do more of that. Like, I could make up 100 different reasons. But all we know is that I do these things. And I think just erasing the why and the because, it just makes life a lot easier because you don't have to deal with it. So it's like the two things that I've been focused a lot on is like elimination of should, which I think I talked a lot about on one of the first podcasts that we did together. And I'd say like my focus right now is kind of elimination of why and because we don't know. You have no idea. Like, I don't know. Like, we're like, I think he was, it's like when someone tries to guess your intention, it's like, you don't know. You don't know why I said that. And the real reason, I don't know why I said that. We just know that I said it and just focus on that. And that's just been easier in terms of like communicating with other people, managing relationships, even persuasion. It's like it's trying to be like, you did this because you don't know. Stick to what you can observe. And that's just made my life a lot easier.
It appears like it's a part of human nature to come up with all of these extra details, problems, justifications, et cetera, like explanations for certain things. Why is it in our nature to continually do this and complicate things when you explain things, it's just so simple?
I have no idea. I know that we do it. I don't know why.
That is so unfair. That is, I mean, it's a perfect answer.
Why is it unfair?
No, it's a great answer. No, it's a great answer. So it's a great,
it's like, I can make something up if you want, but like, it'll just be made up.
Yeah.
And to be fair, most people will just make up answers to questions of like, why? And it's a hard balance for me because sometimes I'll get on podcasts and like the more strict I am and kind of to a certain degree, like what mood I'm in, I might answer very much more strictly on that, but it can sometimes make for a more boring podcast experience because people are like, fine, so we don't know anything. And I'm like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's interesting for me to go from like Layla wants and has all these nice things to you where you're just like, I'm just going to get down to the basics. Why do I want this? Do I really need it? No. It seems like Layla's very much an opposite in that she'll just say, I want it. I don't need to think about why I want it, what this means. I just want it. I'm not going to put any more effort into that.
There was a boat, big yacht that had a name on it that I really liked. And it was, don't analyze your pleasures. And she knows that she likes it. Mm. And I like that she likes it. And like, what is wrong with that? Like the only reason that someone would have any objection to that is simply because of the price tag associated with it. If she liked buying $1 clothes, no one would have any issue with it. Mm-hmm. It's just because it's expensive, but that's based on their understanding of expensive, not necessarily my context. And even if it was, even if I had made the exact same amount of money as whoever would be judging me for, or judging Layla for buying clothing like that, why do you care how I spend my money?
Yeah.
Spend yours your way. Because basically them expressing that is expressing their preference that I would live, they would prefer that I live the way they live their lives. Sure. But like, why don't you just keep living your life the way you prefer? And I'll keep living my life the way I prefer. I don't prefer that you live your wife a different, live your life a different way.
Live your wife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do whatever you want.
Okay.
Yeah. If there's like that's my, like no should, elimination of should, elimination of why and because. That would be my, you know, presidential campaign. No shoulds, no whys and no becauses.
Do you think if you were president that you could do a better job or you could do a great job?
No, I think I would do a horrible job.
You think so?
I don't know.
I heard this question online and everyone's like saying, oh, you should ask people this question to see what they say. I don't know.
I have no aspirations or desires. Mm. I have actually had a conversation this morning about that. Someone's like, man, if you like could talk about politics, you would go so much wider. I don't have interest. Like I've never been interested in politics. I don't follow the news. I like, again, the only thing that I consume is something as it relates to how we make money and how we run our businesses. That is the only thing that I like. I'll consume anything tangentially to that. And that's it. Like if I was in healthcare, I'd probably be looking more about like what, you know, if I was like getting into like HRT, like hormone replacement therapy, if as an industry, if I want to get into, then I'd be looking at legislation that's pending that might make some of our, you know, reclassify some of the drugs that we might be selling or something like that. Like that would be something I'd be interested in, but it wasn't because of the politics. I would just be interested because of the economics. So one, I don't have interest. Second is that I'm not very knowledgeable about it. And those kind of go hand in hand. But like, if someone were to ask me a political question, I don't have any
skill and interest.
Yeah, right. I have no knowledge on that. Mm-hmm. And if I made a point, people probably have an excellent counterpoint and they'd be like, what do you think about that? I'd be like, you're probably right. I don't spend time on this. I feel like I would be giving ignorant advice. Mm-hmm. And if I were to do anything, it would just be like from first principles. And I'm sure there's many things that get in the way of that from like a legislative perspective and whatnot. And so I focus on the things that I am good at and that I enjoy.
Is there anything you're unhappy about?
I would say I have the same complaints that any entrepreneur would, which is like, I always want things to happen faster, but like, I also realize that and try to adjust my expectations appropriately and talk to Solomon and be like, well, what did you expect? If I were to give me advice, I'd be like, you're doing fine. And it's actually happening faster than you originally thought it was going to happen. So like, are you really just readjusting your expectations so that you can be dissatisfied? Well, that sounds silly. I like my life. It's weird. It's odd nowadays to just be like, I like my life. I've spent a lot of effort to create an environment with people that I enjoy doing things that I enjoy. Are there things day to day that come up that are stressors? Of course. Like that's, you know, any business, anything you do has overhead, but I like what I do every day. And I think I'm pretty good at it. And that brings me a lot of enjoyment.
When you wake up, you'd say the off the rip emotion that you feel is
tired.
How much sleep do you get?
Oh, I mean, if I get 8, I can like cure cancer. So like, I got 2 8-hour sleeps in a row this last week. And I was like, I could literally repaint the Mona Lisa right now. Like I felt so good.
What occupies that time that would inhibit you to get 8 hours?
Nothing inhibits me from getting 8 hours. I just wake up earlier. That's like more often what happened.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I haven't put an alarm. Yeah, I haven't put an alarm on in.
How do you do that?
Forever.
Upon first wake up, do you get up or do you sometimes think?
No, I try. If I can go back to sleep, I will. But I mean, there's a lot of things I want to do, and so it's like I get energy. Excited. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, I'll be physically tired, but, like, I'm excited mentally. Like, my brain will turn on, and I'm like, ooh, there's all these things I want to do. I mean, there was a time when I had one of those rings that, like, did your sleep stuff.
Aura ring.
I got more annoyed about the ring.
Why?
Because this is maybe an indication of how much I've changed over time. Yeah. I was 22 the last time I did that, so it was 12 years ago. But I got so competitive with myself to try and, like, beat my last night's PR that I would, like, stress about trying to, like, I would, like, not move so that it wouldn't, like, wake the ring up to think that I was sleeping. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then I was like, I'm sleeping worse now that I have this ring on. So I was like, fuck. And if anything, I'd wake up the next day and it would give me a reason why, like, the day would be, like, it would tell me if I was going to have a good or bad day. And I was like, well, that's silly. Because I've had plenty of days that have been very little sleep and been great days. And I've had days where I slept great.
Because I have the Aura ring and I use it a lot. Yeah. And I do say that when I see in the morning that says, like, you did not get a good night of rest.
Yeah.
Be careful today.
Yeah, yeah.
It does kind of put me in a mood where I'm like, oh, crap. Yeah, yeah. Right. It's telling me I got to be careful. I wouldn't have even thought about that had it not been now planted in my mind that maybe I'm going to be a little slower today.
Well, that's like the superstition stuff that I've talked about where it's like, Dr. Cashy, a good buddy of mine, he says he defines a scam as something that if you remove it, your function gets worse. And so it's like, basically we create these crutches. So it's like, oh man, if I don't have my green juice in the morning, like I feel terrible. But then after a while, you start to be able to only take the green juice just to feel normal. Well, then if I take the green juice away, then I feel bad. Well, then that's a scam. Like it doesn't actually do anything. It doesn't work. And so I'm super cautious. And to like, to your point about like creatine the very earlier, it's like, I just really try not to be superstitious about anything because I want to have as many of the controllables under my control as I can. And if I, like, I love the idea of competing against somebody who has a million crutches. It's like, you just knock one of them out and they're screwed. Like if my competitor, like, oh, if I don't have 8 hours of sleep, I'm a bear. It's like, well, I can't wait for you to have one bad night's sleep. And then I'll just win that day. Cause I don't mind having a short night's sleep and still working. Like I work fine. So anyways, all that to say, sometimes I sleep shorter and sometimes I sleep longer. I sleep as long as I can.
With Layla. I know we kind of like alluded to this in like previous conversations.
A lot about Layla.
It's always about Layla.
Hey, I'm sorry, man. She's,
you got an interest too? What are we talking
about? She's interesting, okay? You guys live, I'm sure, incredibly challenging, incredibly busy lives. Sure. And maintaining a relationship, I know we've talked about this before, but maintaining a relationship in that environment can be incredibly challenging. And you said last time that you have an algorithm. Like you have logic that determines the success of your relationship with Layla. And if something isn't fitting, then you need to change the inputs.
Sure.
I'm wondering, has it continued to serve you to see it as an algorithm? Because I like to think that love is this thing, that it's more of like a nondescript thing that kind of just like occurs between two people. And it's not so like algorithmic and equational. You know what I mean?
Well, I think just for the audience sake, it's not like I have this Excel sheet at home of like, okay, three hugs equals, you know, like a kiss or, you know what I mean? I don't have
one
like
Chanel bag.
Yeah. One Chanel bag equals two good days, you know, whatever, you know? Well, I would say this, which is that if you feel like it is that ephemeral thing that's so hard to capture and so hard to describe, like I'd be like, good luck finding it. And honestly, I think the big difficulty with love and marriages in general is that everything's N equals one. So even like my relationship with Layla is unique in that I am one of one and she's one of one. And I've seen, and you probably have too, I've seen like 60-year marriages, you know, people are 90 in their 90s, very different dynamics with all of them. And like, you guys have a unique partnership for this podcast and everybody else has unique dynamics for their partnership. And we know what has worked for them. I share what has worked for me. If some of those things help other people, awesome. If they don't, then ignore them. You know, both of us tend to be very agreement oriented, meaning neither of us like to be controlled. Both of us have a lot of agency. Like we like to make our own decisions and kind of operate freely. And so like, how do you get two people together that are really strongly independent? We make agreements. And like, these are like, I agree to these things, you agree to these things. And like, as long as that works for us, then we don't change the agreement. It's worked great. And if something comes up, then it's like, hey, let's revisit this. And if it makes sense, then we revisit it. And that has worked really well because we have exceedingly clear expectations of one another in terms of like what we're going to do and what we're not going to do. And that has worked really well.
And there's always resolve between these disagreements.
Yeah.
Eventually.
I mean, pretty quickly usually. Yeah. We don't argue much.
Do you have some other like silver lining that kind of, not silver lining, but like other thing that arbitrates these disagreements between you and her? Maybe some fundamental agreements that you made right in the beginning that you can then use as rules to decide current disagreements? disagreements.
Well, I think fundamentally, Layla and I also both believe that love is conditional, not unconditional. And so even the idea of marriage for us has been based on agreements, which is like, if there were a time in the future where Layla no longer wanted to do the things that I want to do, then I would not hold her to her commitment to be with me because it was contingent on that we want these same things. And so it's like similar mission, similar values, similar interests. If you want to go to the same place and get there the same way, values, and what you spend your time on in between, interests, is aligned, then you'll probably be okay. And I think the problem is that a lot of people will, this is my, you know, one man's two cents, is a lot of people look for, are actively looking for hookups and then thinking hookups will turn into life partners and wives and spouses. But if you were to look for a hookup, you would look for a very different thing than you would for a spouse. And so expecting one to become the other, I don't know if that's the best frame. This has worked for us because we are that way. Now there are people that I know who have amazing relationships where one is completely subservient to the other and that works for them. I really enjoy our relationship because I get tremendous utility from Layla. She serves me in a lot of ways more than I would say most men get from their spouses, at least businessmen, you know what I mean? Who are married. Like it's not common at all for a wife to be even close to Layla's level. I mean, sometimes they're like, oh yeah, she's like the secretary in the business. And sometimes they overtitle the person to make her feel better or whatever. But like, that's, I would say more of the norm, if at all, in the business. Like Layla absolutely runs the business. She is CEO, period. I'm like off to the side and I like think of good things every once in a while. Like she's the one who runs everything. And like only the people inside of our company can actually like appreciate that. And I will still always get the credit because I am who I am and I look the way I look and I talk the way I talk. But like, she's really the one that does it. And so I get a ton out of that. And that this is how it has worked for us. Like Layla in every other relationship in her life was always the dominant one. Like, because most guys will fold to Layla. She's incredibly strong-willed. And like, it's my belief, at least if you enjoyed a male-female dynamic, you just need it. Like if you're a strong woman, you just need a more strong man.
What sort of personal contentions do you have between the two of you? Because it seems like everything is really just business oriented.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about business all day. That's what we do.
Yeah.
I would say that the busier we are with business, the more we will try and carve out time to not be business. If things are more like normal pace, we don't really need to carve the time out. The time kind of happens on its own. And so I've seen, you know, clips and stuff where people say like, you have to have a date night once a week and you can't talk about business. And like people like just like throwing these rules out. I just hate all of that. If we feel like we need to like reconnect because it's like we're a little bit too distant in terms of like, hey, I feel like I haven't seen you in a week, then like, let's go out to dinner. Let's take some time and let's just hang out and catch up. I mean, sometimes the equal opposite, like, I feel like I've been with you all day. Like, I'm going to get some space, go to the gym, hang out, you know, get some food with some guys and like, I'll be back. And so I think we just manage that. And I think, especially in like the world of remote work, I actually think that, in my opinion, people spend too much time together. I think this is Esther Perel, but I think you need to create space to be missed. There's no time where like I'm more excited to see Layla than a time that I haven't seen her. Motivation is the equal opposite of deprivation. If I haven't seen her in a while, I'm deprived of Layla. I'm more motivated to see her. If I've seen her a ton, then I'm probably less motivated to see her.
So you think a lot of times in relationships, people could be spending too much time together.
Absolutely. Nowadays, for sure. They live in the same house. They literally spend all day together. I don't think that's at least normal from how we kind of came.
I think you need two experiences to come together and then you have something to talk about, because otherwise if you've had the same experiences all day for weeks, it's like, what do you talk about?
I was there.
At a certain point? Yeah.
Like, how was your day? I don't know. I was there. Like, yeah, we have nothing else to say. So like, I think when we figured this out for our relationship, it was still like 2 or 3 years in. We actively just like created a ton of space. We worked on opposite sides of the house. We didn't attend. I came off the meetings that she was on. And so like at the end of the day, I was like, oh, you met with John today. How was that? And she's like, oh, this happened. And I was like, oh, and you met with that vendor who's doing this thing. She's like, yeah. And this is what we negotiated. What do you think about this? And you know, like blah, blah, blah. And then I go through my calendar and like, literally we still to this day do that. Is that at the end of the day, we go for a walk, 45 minutes. I take out my phone. She takes out her phone. We go through our calendars and we just literally download like, how was your day? How was my day? Like, what are the things that we're, you know, working on and moving forward? And that's how we kind of like resync up. And then after that, we're kind of husband and wife the rest of the day.
Real quick, guys, you guys already know that I don't run any ads on this and I don't sell anything. And so the only ask that I can ever have of you guys is that you help me spread the word so we can help more entrepreneurs make more money, feed their families, make better products, and have better experiences for their employees and customers. And the only way we do that is if you can rate and review and share this podcast. So the single thing that I ask you to do is you can just leave a review. It'll take you 10 seconds or one type of the thumb. It would mean the absolute world to me. And more importantly, it may change the world for someone else.
What was the logic behind buying that UFC building?
That's dope.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, that's a lot of space. But to go from someone who's kind of working from home remotely to getting a full-on office space that's massive.
Yeah.
How many square feet was that? It was like 12,000 square feet or something?
It's three floors of 12. It's 36.
36,000 square feet?
Yeah, it's 12, 12, 12. Yeah. It's part of the grand plan, what I'm investing in. So we're investing heavily in media. And so that's going to have a ton of studios inside of it that we're actively building out right now. A ton of different sets for different types of content that we want to be putting out with higher quality and higher frequency in the future. That's what I'm building towards. And so having a place where all of my team could sync up and I could attract talent to come, you know, here to Vegas is kind of what we were shooting for.
So what's the grand plan with content? Are you trying to take people under the Hormozy brand? Or?
No, I'm actually going to do more me personally.
Okay.
And Layla, and just we're going to be facilitating more types of content rather than more talking heads, because as much as like my quote brand has grown, that's actually still been the result of like a half day a week or every other week of actual filming. And the rest of it is just the awesome team that we have that knows how to cut, distribute, repurpose content across different platforms. But I actually want to increase inputs into the machine. And in order to do that, I thought it would make sense to make this type of investment.
Yeah, but 36,000 square feet.
Yeah. Well, I want a massive gym. I want a massive gym. So that's like floor one, basically.
A whole floor, 12,000 square feet of gym. That makes no sense. 12,000 square feet.
It's a big commercial gym. Well, half of it's 12,000 square feet. The bottom floor, half is parking.
But there's
going to be a commercial.
Half of the, 100%.
Yeah, but still 6,000 square feet.
Yeah.
Of gym.
Yeah.
There's no way there's enough. Dude, there's machines.
I barely can fit anything in there.
How?
I like equipment. I'm a connoisseur. I'm an aficionado of gym equipment.
But I feel like you could probably get 99% of the same result.
Sure.
With 2,000.
But this isn't a utility question. This is all what Alex wants. This is my purses and my Coco Chanel. Like she could have a plastic bag and carry her shit, but like she wants a Chanel purse. I could just have one shoulder press, but there's three different brands that make different ones that I like for different reasons.
All right. There is one question I have. There's a space in that building, I think, where there's one of those like roll up things that goes into a space. What's your purpose with that?
That's just parking. That's the bottom floor. Half is.
I thought there's one where it's kind of like a bit of a. It looks like a bit of a warehouse.
Yeah, there's the roll up door. That's the whole. That's the bottom floor. Yeah, there's the roll up, and then you've got all the parking, and then I mean it has all the pillars. And
what would it take for the iced coffee hour to be able to get an office space in there?
Got to take it up with Layla.
Layla said that she would do
it
for free. That's what she said.
Layla definitely.
Don't ask her.
Yeah,
but she said as long as you say it's okay.
Right We've already prepared it.
No, I'm stoked about it. But to answer the question, I don't want to spoil anything, but we have a bunch of new shows that we're going to be putting out, new types of content, new characters that we're going to be bringing in to the content, like a lot of really cool stuff. Like I was super inspired when I went out to see Dave Ramsey and his whole setup.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. But what was it like for meeting Dave Ramsey?
It was great. Dave was exactly the same. You know what I mean? As I expected him to be. I mean, my whole interview, I don't know if you saw it, was all about business.
Yeah.
Like I just wanted, cause like he always talks about personal finances and savings. He kind of has his like his buzz things. And I wanted to like try and avoid those to get to like, how does Ramsey Solutions work? And kind of like, what were some of the strategic decisions that he made that led him to there? The thing that I find really interesting is that he has somehow managed to have an education and information business without being seen as a scam. And I find like, think about anybody else who sells a course, coaching, events, and an app. That's like the prototypical, every other coach, whatever guru out there. And somehow he managed to do that and build a $300 million a year business from basically the same ingredients. And I was like, I wanted to really get close to like what made it different for Dave versus everybody else. And so I think there's two main things. This is my two cents. So Dave, if you ever see this, this is my thoughts. One is that the promise that he was making was something that is absolutely believable. No one could fight, which is that if you spend less money, you will have more left over. It's very different than most other promises, which is our make money, which is like, if you do this thing, then you make $2,000 a month or whatever it is. It's like, if you make 5,000 and you save 1,000, you have 1,000 left over. There's just no one can fight you. Right. And I think that really protects him from a promises perspective.
Yeah.
The other side is that he absolutely focuses on brand above everything and his reputation. And so like an indication of that is that he does the biggest slice of revenue that he has is media. Like everybody else just like right hooks the shit out of their audience at all times. And so like they couldn't even sell media places, media spots on their own if they wanted to, because they have like no goodwill in their audience. Mm-hmm. But he still deposits so much more goodwill, provides so much more value at scale that he's able to make, you know, $10 million a month just on media alone. He shared that on the podcast. Yep. So I don't mind sharing it. Those are the two big ones. And then the third kind of bonus takeaway that I had was they run a lot more events than I thought they did, which I thought was pretty interesting. They run an event every week. I was like, huh.
I think that's, isn't that a newer thing?
I don't know.
Them?
They have a new, yeah. They have that venue, but they're doing one a week. And so I thought that was interesting. Yeah. And then the second thing, you know, bonus B2 was the amount of volume that he was putting in. And that was part of what inspired me to basically do more was I figured that he would spend the majority of his time running Ramsey Solutions and then make, you know, do his show and then, and whatnot. But when you look at actual hours, he spends like 20 hours a week making content. And I also found that with PBD, he also did 20 hours a week and some of these other brands that produce a lot of content. And when I look at my hours, significantly less than that, because we spend way more on the portfolio side. And so the building was somewhat of a commitment and investment towards building towards that.
I think what I'm getting from this is that you were inspired by Dave Ramsey.
Yeah.
You bought this building and you can turn your version of business,
my way.
Your Dave Ramsey approach to what you're doing.
Yeah. That'll be an element of it for sure. Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. I mean,
I wish you could tell us more about
model. Like, I mean, you'll see it, but a model success, you know what I mean? I mean, I think that we will do it a little bit differently because we're, you know, we're us, we talk about business, we have different subject matters and whatnot. But I think it's funny because I've been a remote only business since, I mean, basically almost my entire career. And so, I mean, I had my in-person gyms, but even those I ran from home because you know I didn't drive out to all the locations every day. And so it's really cool having the in-person now and like seeing people at the office every day. And I think the amount that we can influence and teach and upskill the team in an in-person environment is so much faster than in a remote environment. And the ability to influence culture at scale is so much faster in an in-person environment. So I'm actually just very excited for our speed of execution that we're probably going to be able to unlock. Yeah.
When is the gym going to be complete?
Probably a month. Well, I'd say it's stages. So the entire gym will be done probably in a month and it'll have the first wave of equipment. I'll have equipment orders coming in for the next year after that.
Wow. I really want to go there and work out.
Oh, it'll be the best gym in Vegas. And one will be able to go.
one can go.
But Jack
it's
and
not
I.
Gonna be like, it's not like a public gym. I'm not going to like have
it's a private gym. Yeah, it's like someone's, you know.
Yeah, it's my office. I'm not like having.
But Jack and I.
Come a little bit of room for a couple of folks.
Jack and I could go, right?
I mean.
We get an invite.
You just take it up with Layla. I'm sure she'll be able to write up some terms for you.
She for sure says yes.
Are you going to put a ping pong table in there?
We already have one.
Got it.
We game. We ball.
Are you living from the office? I feel like I wouldn't leave. Like for you to be that efficient, I would live there.
Not as much as you think, actually. Really? So to be fair, we're still like building out some of the stuff and some stuff's like half done. And so it's easier for me to do some things at home. But one of the things that we wanted to be really particular about was we wanted to create an incredibly rewarding environment that would encourage people to come, you know, as often as possible, but not have like rules. As in, you don't have to show up at 9. You don't have to stay till 5. Like you don't have to come certain days of the week because we've been a remote company. But the idea was that we would want to create an environment that people wouldn't want to stay home from. And so that's kind of what we're shooting for.
Yeah. When I saw, Jack and I saw Mr. Beast, he turned one of his offices into a bedroom and it was incredible.
Yeah.
And it made me kind of think if I were in that position, I would not mind living.
If I were single, I would absolutely live in the office. Yeah. If I were single, I would absolutely live in the office.
But it's big enough where you and Layla could have 3,000 square feet in this place.
A ton. Yeah.
And you would never even know.
Well, there's already a suite. There's two suites that have full, actually there's three suites that have bathrooms and full everything. And the previous owner was international. And so he would come and he would sleep here or sleep at the building. And then he would fly back. I think he was like Asian. No.
She wouldn't go Layla, for it?
Not even close. Like not really? A chance, not a chance on earth.
Yeah. To me, that just seems like so much fun because like the gym is down there.
You also just never leave. And I think there's like, it's almost creating space to be missed from work too. It's like, it's nice to have somewhere to go. And I will say with the office thing, and Jason, you can back me up here. I do feel it's such a different vibe going home. When you work from home all the time, it's like home and work are just basically all the time, but working somewhere separate from where you live, when you get back, home feels a little bit more relaxing, which is kind of nice.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you prefer at this point having an office?
I do. I'm super pro office right now. Really like it.
That's something I've not had in a very long time. I used to go into the Oppenheim group almost every day, pretty much. I'd be there even when I was mostly doing YouTube full time. I'd still go into the office just because I liked it. I enjoyed just getting out of the house, going somewhere.
It's exactly
seeing other
that.
People work.
It's literally that.
Got me in the zone of working because it's like, oh, everyone else is here. I put on my headphones and
It's exactly done, that.
I felt motivated.
It's exactly that. And I know I'll work out harder when the team's there around me. Like I'm like, yeah. I'm going to be able to like be able to record content while I'm working out, which I don't really do because at public gyms, it's weird. I already get enough people stopping me. It's like, they don't want to draw more attention, but like, I'll be able to do that at the gym there and that'll be awesome. So like now I'm actually having another rewarding like stimulus from working out. So it's like, I get to work out and then I also get to make content. So it's like, I have even more reason to work out. So it's just giving more ways to win, which I like.
I think it'd make a great series if for your content, what you would do, like, you know, how Dave Ramsey has people on, take note of this, you work out with somebody else in kind of like a podcast setting. So you mic them up and you do workouts.
You're planning on doing
this. Okay. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah, I agree. I think that would be very
part
cool.
Part of the plan. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I'll announce the name. It's going to be called Between Sets.
Between Sets.
Fantastic name.
Wow. I like that.
Yeah.
That's good. Did you come up with that?
Yeah.
You did.
Yeah, because a lot of my life lessons actually happen between sets. And so it's like I'd be lifting with an older guy and we'd be between sets and he'd be like, you know, blah, blah. Or I'd ask him a question. And he's like, yeah, this is kind of how I see it. And I always liked that environment too, because like at least my experience in the gym has been so overwhelmingly positive throughout my entire life. I've had so many mentors, so many friends, so many life lessons learned in the gym between sets. I want to kind of like take the audience along for that kind of same experience that I grew up basically. I mean, I've spent so much of my life in the gym, you know, literally like from teenage years in high school to literally what my career was for the first 5 years of my professional career after my job was literally being in the gym all day. So I have just so many positive experiences there. And just also as a weird side note, this is from a creator perspective. I think like of my top like 20 clips of all time, like 6 of them are me at the gym and I've only recorded at the gym twice ever. So it's just kind of interesting. I was like, I don't know if it's like a juxtaposition of like, dude, but not talking about fitness stuff. I basically don't talk about,
you know what
the
thing is, gym content is doing really, really, really well right now. Okay, and so it's on an uptrend. But the other thing I've noticed is that when you're talking, people lose retention if you're just static.
Yeah.
But if you're there doing something, it's like listening to you with Subway Surfers on the bottom, except you could incorporate you lifting weights and speaking.
Yeah.
There's just two things going on. I could watch you lift the weight and I could listen at the same time.
Yeah.
So I think it's really dynamic. I think that's really important.
You would know. But yeah, so we're super stoked about that. And also all my tweets, the vast majority of them come to me while I'm working out. So it's like, I'll be between sets and I'll just be firing off tweets. And so this time I'll just be doing that to a camera.
Yeah. You know what I mean? The one request I have, meet with Sam Selleck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do something with him as soon as possible. I would love if he could be the first person you have
on between sets. Well, we're going to have not him first, but
who's the first?
So when Chris Williamson and I did our podcast, we actually worked out together. And so we had a really great exchange while we worked out. And so the team compressed that into which will be the first episode of between sets. But
how long is that going to be?
You would know.
How long is the episode?
13, 14 minutes. Yeah. We'll see. Yeah. We'll experiment with it.
I'm going to tell you what'll be the best if you make this an hour long workout and you include the entire thing.
Yeah.
I think the entire hour with, by the way, no edits. If you could do one straight shot, post it to YouTube, no edits.
Yeah.
Including like you getting up, like you're kind of out of breath.
Yeah.
People are loving that. That's why Sam is doing so well. It's just no edits.
Yeah.
It's just real.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is lacking right now on YouTube.
Yeah. No, I mean, we're down for anything.
Yeah.
You know, whatever serves the audience, we're happy to, you know, provided it works with our values, we're down to done out.
What's your hair care routine?
Oh God, nothing.
Do you use shampoo?
No.
What? What do you mean you don't use, shampoo?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
My hair gets like super fluffy. So I just don't.
So you just use water? What about conditioner?
I don't.
Ever? No shampoo ever.
Right.
Graham, I did this for like 8 months.
Yeah, but I feel like the hair just gets way down.
No, you scrub. I mean, you scrubbed. I mean, you still scrub your scalp. Yeah. You still like.
The thing is, you strip yourself of the natural oils when you do use shampoo. Yeah. This is the theory, and then you overproduce these oils, which then makes your hair really oily and creates dandruff. But if you get past like the lump of like no shampoo, then it ends up being healthier.
I don't know.
I mean, I've been doing this for years. I've been doing this for years.
And it's also good because apparently, when you're like really scrubbing on your scalp, it facilitates hair growth. As well, is what they say. You're stimulating the hair
follicles. Yeah, I guess
so. What about your beard? Do you use any product there?
Actually, I started using it's like chapstick for your beard. But it's just if I comb it out in the morning, it just stays a little straighter. Otherwise, it's just like it's like a mangled monster.
And do you do that? Do you keep this look because it's for branding? Or do you do it like for any other reason?
It's so funny. I got, there was like a mastermind or something, like a group of people who were all, so a buddy of mine was there and he was like, somebody got up and was like, so this is Hormozy's strategy to blah, blah, blah. And I always find it funny when people break down my strategies when there wasn't one. But I was wearing, I literally am wearing the outfit that I can wear in the most environments comfortably. So like I can wear this to the pool. I can wear this to the gym. I can wear this to this podcast. I can go out to dinner because I just throw a flannel on top of it. And I'm good to go. And also we're in Vegas and so it's hot a lot. And so I wear like the lightest thing that I can wear. With.
But that beard is more maintenance to keep it like that, I'm guessing, than it is to trim it.
No. Trimming and shaving is way more than this. I literally just exist. And then I come in the morning, 5 seconds while I'm on Zoom. Jason, I'll be on Zoom.
Yeah, but you have to trim it every now and then, right?
No, if somebody comes.
You sculpt
if
it.
If somebody
and
comes,
yeah.
Why can't you just do it yourself?
I let Scissors. Them do it. I mean, I just sit down, he comes, I can take a call, I can do whatever I want, he's just cutting it while I'm there.
How much is that?
I don't know.
People have been saying it could be a weak chin.
A weak chin?
He's
you,
actually
what
hiding.
What do you say to this?
He's hiding no chin.
Yeah, you're right.
That's what they're saying.
You're right.
That's it.
That's what it is.
It's all what's behind
That's
it.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's weak chin.
Okay, one last, I have a question about the Nicorette.
Sure.
Have you found, because I've heard, I actually heard this from Tucker Carlson on Theo Von, which is amazing. If you guys haven't seen it, you guys should watch it after this episode. that this Nicorette stuff, like nicotine in and of itself, isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it's this stuff, all of the auxiliary things that happens when you ingest nicotine, usually, which is like the smoke that hurts your lungs or your gums and et cetera. But nicotine actually increases mental acuity. It makes you more energetic. It motivates you, et cetera. Have you noticed the same thing with this Nicorette?
I mean, I've been chewing Nicorette for like 14 years.
Wait, really? I didn't know this. Why? Why did you start doing
the reason that? I like nicotine in general.
How did you get started on that?
I started chewing nicotine.
You started chewing it or you started smoking?
I started chewing nicotine.
You went straight to chewing.
How do you decide one day I'm going to start chewing?
I liked dipping. And then I was like, well, dipping's bad for you. So then I just like started chewing Nicorette, got the same benefits and been chewing it since.
So what are the benefits that you get?
It's a short acting stimulant. So it's a 30-minute half-life. So like you can chew this at 5 o'clock in the afternoon because you want to have like a boost from 5 to 7 or something. Now 30 minutes. So it's like, it'll half multiple times in that time period, but you can go to sleep fine. And so, it's an appetite suppressant. So if you are trying to like maintain calories or something like anything like that, like if you are hungry and you're like, I got to take a call at 12 and I'm hungry now, I got to wait till 1. It's like, you can pop a Nicorette and it's just very easy. It is stimulant from an energy like perspective. It also increases short-term memory, which is nice. And I have a history of Alzheimer's in my family, and it's been shown to decrease the likelihood of Alzheimer's because it promotes angiogenesis, which is just basically increasing blood flow in the brain.
And then what are the negatives of doing that?
I haven't found any. I see nicotine a lot like caffeine. Like it's just, it would just be like if for some reason we magically found that coffee had like cancer causing stuff in it, but caffeine itself was fine.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well don't drink coffee. You can still like drink Mountain Dew or you can just take caffeine pills. Sure. Exactly. I see nicotine the same way. And I also haven't found myself addicted to it. Like I forget to chew it. I like it because if you want to talk about like associating things from a behavior perspective, like I chew nicotine when I work. And so I have associated work with nicotine. And so it's like, if you want to get addicted to work, then put an addictive agent close to the thing that you actually want to do. But if I don't work, I forget to chew it.
Why aren't smokers just chewing Nicorette gum all the time?
Because smoking is addicting.
It's the oral fixation.
Smoking is addicting.
I guess this is the first I've ever heard of someone just chewing the gum.
Yeah, smoking is addicting. Smoking. Separate, like nicotine in and of itself, and I'm not even going to get in the science pros in the comments, but like I have no draw. I forget to take it. And when I say take it, I mean chew it. I forget to chew it. So I have not found it to be addictive per the science people that I know. Into and of itself is not addictive. It is the other things like chewing tobacco, like the act of dipping, things like that are addictive. Smoking is addictive. Vaping itself is like
those were addictive because of the nicotine, not because of the way they're consumed.
Multiple things.
You're saying you could have decaf coffee and it would satisfy your coffee addiction in the same way, essentially, assuming caffeine and nicotine are.
Well, it would be like me smoking a cigarette that doesn't have caffeine, if that was the analogy.
Right.
So I don't understand.
Well, no. Like you're saying it's not necessarily the nicotine because you say you forget to take it.
Yeah.
But for the people that are addicted to smoking cigarettes, it's the oral fixation.
I think the things are paired. I think it's the together.
Got it.
I think it's both the things together. And also like there's also many, because like also when do people smoke? And like this is getting, like I want to be very clear, this is beyond my, my scope, but people pair things that are positive with smoking. So it's like you go outside, you get some time, like you're working, you associate it with a break, and then you light up. So it's like there's all of the other things that get associated with together, and that's what gets harder to quit.
Got it. That makes sense. Yeah.
But I enjoy it. If you are want to someday start into the nicotine world, just don't take too much. Try to get Layla addicted to it, and no one gets addicted, so it doesn't really matter. But she chewed too much, and she was like, this isn't for me. I was like, well, that's like drinking a whole bottle of vodka and saying like alcohol isn't for me. I was like, take a shot, see how you feel. And I think the same thing with nicotine is like chew a half a milligram and just see how you feel and go from there. I mean, I chew a ton, but I just like it, so whatever.
I do believe that we probably have to put some sort of disclaimer here.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
The iced coffee hour people, we're not knowledgeable on this subject.
Oh, neither are we.
Intuitively, I would say don't do it, but you do have somebody that says it has positively affected their
life. Don't do it.
In the same way that Tucker Carlson said that it has positively affected his life.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I've just heard bad things. That's what they taught me in school.
And my official stance is don't do it, and it doesn't affect me what you do. So like, and what I do doesn't affect you. It's fine. I have accepted whatever risks come with it. I enjoy it. And if I die 5 years younger, it's okay.
All right. Fair enough. That's so fascinating.
The laugh at the end.
Why do you need to live a long time anyways?
Well, because
compared to 1,000 years,
assuming
whether it's 85 or 75,
this is our only life, our only opportunity at anything, right? Then wouldn't you want to extend it?
Not necessarily. I think there's a difference between health span and work span and lifespan. Like some people like add years to their life, but they don't add life to their years.
That's great. I like that a lot. That's a fantastic quote. You've tweeted that, I'm guessing?
No. But I'm sure someone has said
you should. That's a great tweet right there. Do you have any other tricks like the Solomon chats that you employ to be better off?
Sure. I have a lot of frames on dealing with stress and missed expectations. Because I think if you're in business or really just in life in general, like you're bound to have expectations that are not met. And so I have a number of, to your word, tricks that I've used. So like one of them is one that I call the frame of the veteran, which I got from Dr. Kashi, which is basically like something bad happens. And then you imagine that it happens 1,000 times in a row after that. And then you think, okay, well, how would I feel on 1,000th time of this happening? And usually on 1,000th time, you would have already habituated to it and just be a part or a fact of life. And it's like, well, if that's how I can feel about it then I might as well feel about it now, that way now. And so the first time I ever used it, I just bought this just sounds so hokey. I got this flannel shirt that I really liked. It was like a color scheme I thought was cool. And the maid that I had shrunk it. And I was like super annoyed. And I thought to myself, I was like, well, if everything that she ever did shrunk and every time I washed something it shrunk, then I wouldn't be upset about it because it just would be how clothes work in the dryer. Or so if that's how it always was, then I wouldn't be upset about it. So if I can choose to not be upset about it then I won't be upset about it now. And then it was over. And so it's like having like frameworks like that that have served me really well. Like the reason I had the time one, when we just talked about like lifespan, is like when my cat Bill died, I was super bummed because I really liked the cat and he died at like 18 months. So it was kind of like weird. It was like a freak, odd death. And I remember being sad about it. And I was like, why am I sad? Why am I sad? And I was like, I feel like it's not fair that he lived such a short life. I was like, okay, so that means that I had an expectation that he would live longer than he did. I was like, what if cats only lived 6 months and I got to hang out with Bill for 18 months. Well, then I'd be like, well, shit, I mean, he lived a good long life. I mean, I got him 3 times longer than most people get their cats. And so then all of a sudden, like my sadness was like, it shifted to like more of an appreciation for the time that I had with him. And so it was simply just shifting my expectation around what I expected or I demanded of the universe that my cat should live longer, but why? And then I think about that within the context of like our lives, because if all humans live to 20, if we like at 34, I'm like, dude, I'm murdering it. Mm-hmm. But like within the context of like all time, we all don't live long at all. And so if I got to live the way that I wanted to live for the extent of my life, it's only the expectation that I would deserve to or demand that I live longer and have that unmet, which is the thing that would cause me to be more upset. But if I make life choices that cause me to live till 75 versus 85, the lifespan is still the lifespan. And the only thing I lose is the present.
So all of these things, what I like about it is that it's just a change in perspective. It's not a change in what is. Yeah. It's just a different framework of mind.
How you see it.
And that makes all the difference.
One of the other frames I use is just zooming all the way out, which is one of my favorites, which is just you have this instance that bothers you, whatever happened, right? I lose $15 million and be really upset about it. And then I just like zoom all the way out and I'm like, you know, far enough out, you can't even see the earth. And I just like remind myself of that. And then I'm like, okay, this just doesn't matter. And then I zoom back in again. And so I usually play with time and space in terms of trying to reframe whatever the issue is that I'm upset about and think like, what is the expectation that I have and how is it unmet? And how can I shift that expectation? And what if the expectations were completely different? What if every time I drove, there was always 20 minutes of traffic? Would I still be upset? Probably not, because it would be just like how it always is. And so like using those things on a regular basis, I think have allowed me to make better decisions and be a little bit less emotional or reactive to bad news. And I think if you compound that like small amount of space that you can create for yourself for an extended period of time, you can make better decisions. And so that's probably been, to answer your question, like some of the tricks that have been really useful for me.
I'm wondering, because you spend a lot of your time working and it seems like you have this routine every single day is somewhat similar. Sure. Are you concerned that you're spending some period of time in your life that a lot of people would deem like the golden years, sure, doing the same thing over and over again, rather than like openness to experience and maybe trying traveling or trying and going this, doing this new hobby, like this ping pong thing, right? Doing a new thing and experiencing it. And then what if it's like 10 times better than whatever you had? What if you allocated a certain percentage of your time on a weekly basis to try out something new?
Well, one, I wouldn't know if there was something that was better. Mm-hmm. And so that doesn't bother me very much. Like there could be some, I'm sure there's something that could be hypothetically better, but I also would hedonistically adapt to it anyways and probably return right back to my baseline. I mean, there are people who live in Africa who never leave the tribe and are happier than we are. And so like, I don't think finding out more things is like the path. But for me, to somebody who would criticize my quote way of living, I do exactly what I want with as much, a highest percentage of my day as I humanly can with the people that I want to do it with. And so like I get criticized from family still to a degree that I quote work too much, but that's because like their projection of what work means to them is just so negative. And if I said all I do is play video games all day, then they would say that I'm not working enough. But what if my job was to play video games all day, then I'd be working too much. It's just like, It's simply just their projections of how they would prefer I live my life. Their statement is, I would prefer you live your life the way I want you to live your life. To which I say no. So I live my life the way I want to live it. And that is enough.
Cool. I love it.
Okay.
Thank you, man.
Fantastic.
Thank you guys.
That really was great. It. We're so it, happy yeah. to have you on. I want like, I mean, if it's not too much to ask, every year, you know, the recurring guests. Yeah. Because look it, we have developments. Yeah. Like last time.
It was shoulds, now it's about becauses. Yeah,
exactly. That's a huge change. And I bet you next time there's going to be more exemptions.
Probably.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm gonna eliminate. I mean, I try to eliminate all labeling language, but that is a big
one. Then there's not even any is. Yeah. Just.
I mean, yeah. I mean, that actually is a big one.